Stand by for the fastest 60 minutes in Jewish radio. It's time for the Jewish Experience. Hi, everyone. Welcome back. Hey, don't procrastinate. Call or write us today if you want to see us stay on the air. We have one more show to go. Hi, I'm Hirsch DeLynn, your host, and you are tuned in to Pittsburgh's only Jewish radio program, The Jewish Experience. Yes, we need to hear from you now. If you want the JE to remain on the air, you must show your support by pledging at least $18 or more at jewishexperience@verizon.net. We always hear from folks how much they enjoy and look forward to the program each week, but frankly, they haven't backed it up with ads or donations. And next week will be our last program for a while, unless we hear from you now. And today is Lag BaOmer. Hope you had a great Lag BaOmer. We had a great bonfire last night. And because it's Lag BaOmer, we're actually going to be able to play you some real music. How about that? Parsha this week is Bechukotai. God promises that if the people of Israel will keep his commandments, they will enjoy material prosperity and dwell secure in their homeland. But you know, God also delivers a harsh rebuke, telling them that if they don't follow his commandments, they'll be exiled and persecuted by the other nations, and all other evils will come upon them for not living up to the covenant they made. Well, even though we did get exiled, God's Shekhinah, or presence, also went into exile with us, because God said, even when they are in the land of their enemies, I will not cast them away, nor will I ever abhor them, to destroy them, and to break my covenant with them, for I am the Lord their God. And the parsha concludes with the rules on how to calculate the value of different types of pledges made to God. And speaking of pledges, the staff of the JE pledges to bring you only the best in Shabbos preparation programming with Rabbi Meir Goldwasser, Moshe Bakar, Rabbi Yosef Eisen, Ms. Deborah DeLynn, and Dr. Michael Shulman. So sit back and enjoy 60 minutes of the best Jewish radio in southwestern Pennsylvania. Our guest today is Binyamin Lifshitz, spokesman for the Crown Heights Shomrim. This is the group that acts to protect the residents of Crown Heights, similar to our Squirrel Hill Citizens Patrol, but they actually make citizen arrests, and they hold perpetrators till the police arrive. You might have heard of the recent beating of a 16-year-old yeshiva student and the violence that has ensued. Well, stay with us to find out just what is going on the streets of Crown Heights and how the Shomrim are working to keep the peace. Of course, we'll have your community announcements and mazel tovs, along with current news fresh from Israel National Radio, coming up on the half hour. Don't forget, you can always find us on the web at jewishexperienceradio.com. Don't forget to sponsor your favorite segment or honor a simcha, remember your site. Your help keeps the JE on the air for you. We must have community support to remain on the air. If you like what you hear, please donate today and ask your friends to do the same. If we find the community can't support the program at this time, we're going to be forced to suspend our broadcast at the end of May until adequate support can be found. Don't wait. Donate today at jewishexperience@verizon.net. And always, we thank our regular sponsors. Burton Hirsch Funeral Homes, been with us all along. Next Generation Financial Services, First Mariner Bank, Pittsburgh Simcha Orchestra, and Artistic Photography. And over yet, candlelighting time tonight is 8:19 p.m., so sit back and enjoy, at least today, some real music just for you right here on a Erev Shabbos, Lag BaOmer afternoon.
Yeah.
with an insight on this week's Parsha is our resident rabbi, Rabbi Meir Goldwasser.
Today is Lag BaOmer, the yard site of the holy Tanna Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. It is a day of great holiness, for this is what the Rashbi wished, that all of Klal Yisrael should be joyous on his day, the day that his neshama went up above and was bound up with the Eibishter. It is also a day of intense holiness, and we too, by walking in the ways of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, are able to have some part in the great godly revelations which take place on this day. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was a very, very great Talmud Chacham. He spent all of his days learning Torah. Nevertheless, he tried to go to help the rest of his people. And we are told that on one occasion, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai went out and asked the people, "Is there something that I could help you with?" The people said to him, as the Gemara tells us, that there was a certain main thoroughfare that Kohanim were prohibited from using. They had to use a much more difficult alternate route, because the people could not remember the exact location of human bodies that had once been buried in that area. If so, a Kohen is not permitted to travel on it. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai investigated and was able to determine the exact spot where the bodies were buried, thus making the rest of the area accessible for the Kohanim. Rabbi Shimon was willing to lower himself to a level at which he would feel the attraction that the other person had experienced in some slight way, so that he could find merit for that person. This descent is not similar to Moshe Rabbeinu, when Hashem instructed him, Lech Reid, to descend Mount Sinai after the Jewish people sinned and made the golden calf. There Moshe was forced to go down. Here, Rabbi Shimon independently chose to lower himself in order to excuse everyone from harsh judgment. He gained this capability to intervene even on behalf of sinful ones because of his tremendous spiritual elevation. He was one of the great tzaddikim, of which there are very few. So on this day, if we want to share in the revelations of godliness that are taking place, we should try in some way to walk in the ways of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai and to exert ourselves in the mitzvah of helping others.
Retirement can be a wonderful reward for years of hard work, but it can also be stressful as you deal with questions about how to maintain your standard of living while protecting what you worked so hard for. What if I told you that you could generate extra cash flow without touching a penny of your savings, investments, or current income? If you or someone you love is 62 years or older and owns their own home, they may be able to take advantage of a federally regulated program called a home equity conversion mortgage or reverse mortgage. Seniors all across the U.S. are using reverse mortgages to increase their cash flow for purchasing long-term care insurance, putting grandkids through college, making charitable donations, paying off credit card debt, paying for prescription drugs, buying vacation homes, and paying for much-needed home repair. Call for a free copy of the Homekeeper Mortgage Consumer Fact Sheet today. Get the facts and help yourself and your family through a reverse mortgage. Call Andy at 412-562-2220 for a free copy while supplies last. Again, that number is 412-562-2220 for your free copy of the Homekeeper Mortgage Consumer Fact Sheet. First Mariner Bank is an equal housing lender. All around us, life is moving faster and faster. Things are changing all the time, and it's a comfort to know in your time of need that at Burton Hirsch Funeral Home, the Jewish tradition continues. Burton Hirsch Funeral Home has served the Pittsburgh Jewish community since 1947 and has recently remodeled its entire facility to better serve you. Burton Hirsch Funeral Directors are members of the Jewish Funeral Directors Association and work closely with area rabbis to ensure that your needs as a Jewish family are totally met. Their attentive and compassionate guidance results in treating each family as their own. I personally met with Michael Hilgefort. And did you know that Burton Hirsch Funeral Home is even involved with community educational programs to ensure that Jewish families know what to do to have a proper burial? In your time of special need, call Squirrel Hill's only Jewish funeral home, Burton Hirsch, at 412-521-2600. That's 412-521-2600. They welcome your request to visit and tour their state-of-the-art facilities. Burton Hirsch Funeral Home, proud sponsors of the Jewish Experience,
1600.
Now it's time for a moment in Jewish history with the author of Miraculous Journey, Rabbi Yosef Eisen.
By 1700, there were roughly 300 Jews in America. This number grew to 2,500 by the American Revolution of 1776. Up to 1720, the Jews were exclusively of Spanish and Portuguese descent. Afterward, Ashkenazim from Central and Eastern Europe arrived. The Jews settled in New York City, Philadelphia, Charleston, Savannah, and Newport. The first synagogue, New York's She'erith Israel, was built in 1728. Philadelphia's Mikveh Israel, the oldest continuous Jewish service in America, was established in 1740. Touro Synagogue in Newport was built in 1764 and is the oldest synagogue in the United States. It has been designated a National Historic Landmark by the United States government and is still currently in use. The new American Jews had no Torah learning and eventually assimilated. A few learned individuals did exist, most notably Rabbi Rafal Karigel. Born in Eretz Yisrael, his travels brought him to Newport, Philadelphia, and New York, and he acted as an unofficial rabbi in all three places. Gershom Mendes Seishes, born in New York in 1745, also served a number of communities, including performing many ritual circumcisions. He was one of the invited clergy at the inauguration of President George Washington in 1789. During the Revolution, Jews served on both the American and British sides, although the majority of Jews favored independence. Chaim Solomon of Philadelphia, Deputy Treasurer of the United States, bankrupted himself paying the Republic's bills and died a pauper. Interestingly, recently his descendants sued the United States for principal and interest over a 200-year period, claiming that the money was a loan. However, the United States court ruled that since Chaim Solomon gave a gift, no payment was due. Although America had very few of the world's Jews, Eastern Europe contained the vast majority of the world Jewish population. In 1772, Poland was partitioned between Russia, Austria, and Prussia, eventually disappearing as an independent nation. Russia, which had a long-standing policy of prohibiting Jewish settlement, suddenly acquired vast numbers of Jews. Anxious to prevent Jewish expansion into Russia, the Tsar restricted Jews to the areas between the Baltic and the Black Seas, essentially the western part of the empire. Certain classes of Jews deemed useful to the regime, such as medical professionals, were exempted from the decree, and in many instances, Jews were able to bribe capricious government officials for residency permits. However, the vast majority of Jews in the Russian Empire were crammed into the Pale of Settlement, which held a majority of the Jewish people into the 20th century.
Now, from the Israel National Radio Newsroom, here's Ernie Singer.
Prime Minister Ehud Olmert says he does not intend to give up on talks with the PLO in Syria, even though he does not know how much longer he'll be in office. The Haaretz Daily reporting that the Prime Minister made the remarks this past week during a closed-door meeting of close associates in his Kadima party. On Friday morning, the Jerusalem District Court telling prosecutors and representatives of the Prime Minister, former Omert aide Chula Zaken and American businessman Morris Talansky, to try to reach a compromise on Talansky's early testimony regarding bribery and breach of trust charges against Olmert. Before that hearing, Talansky was scheduled to talk to police on Sunday before returning to his ailing wife in the United States. The Prime Minister questioned Friday morning by police about money that Talansky allegedly gave him, based on their interrogation Thursday of former Olmert associate Uri Messer. Police have been trying to establish a pattern of quid pro quo in Olmert's relationship with Talansky to substantiate a charge of bribery. The Ma'ariv Daily reporting that police are looking into suspicions that Olmert asked an Israeli diplomat in South America to assist Talansky in marketing a technological product he was merchandising at the time when Olmert was Minister of Industry, Trade, and Employment. Other allegations that have been leaked include a request by Olmert to businessmen to buy a minibar Talansky was marketing. The Jerusalem Post reporting that rabbis worried about the status of the Temple Mount in Jerusalem encouraged Talansky to testify against the prime minister, but the American businessman denied the claim. The News First Class website says that Talansky's ties with Omer may have allowed Talansky to increase the amount of funds he raised, and police have to look at how much money went into private pockets. Nobody injured as of Friday morning from bonfires burning nationwide for Lag BaOmer, the 33rd day of the 49 days between Passover and Pentecost, or Pesach and Shavuot in Hebrew. Very few reports of fires getting out of control. Hundreds of thousands jamming the area around Meron in the Galilee to visit the grave of Kabbalist author Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai and to get home in time for Shabbat. Ailing former Chief Sephardi Rabbi Mordechai Eliyahu tapping on the monitors next to his bed while his family members sang songs about Rabbi Bar Yochai. Rabbi Eliyahu answering urgent questions by nodding his head, making signs with his hands, and writing. Quoting his son Shmuel Eliyahu, the rabbi of Tzfat, the older Eliyahu conscious after surviving a heart attack and a stroke by a complete miracle. There's a deadlock in attempts to arrange a ceasefire between Israel and terrorists in Hamas-controlled Gaza, Hamas insisting on Israel opening crossings that Israel has all but closed in response to terrorist missile attacks. Israel says that won't happen without the release of Corporal Gilad Shalit, abducted by Hamas allies from an army base near one of the crossings almost 2 years ago. A Givati Brigade force killing two enemy gunmen who had been laying explosive charges near the Kisufim crossing from Gaza to other parts of Israel on Friday. Weapons were found on the bodies of the terrorists. The Air Force hitting two terrorists in a cell carrying anti-tank weapons in southern Gaza. A soldier is being treated for moderate to serious wounds suffered when Hamas terrorists fired an anti-tank shell at ground troops operating there. Israel has been carrying out counterterrorism efforts throughout the Hamas-controlled area since Thursday. Foreign Minister Tzipi Livni asking her visiting French counterpart Bernard Kouchner this past week to stop contacts with Hamas. Kouchner saying earlier in the week that France had contacts with Hamas but not diplomatic relations. Livni explained to him that Thursday's attempted suicide bombing near the Erez crossing should, in her words, demonstrate to the international community that, while it demands that Israel take care of the situation in Gaza and open the crossing points, Hamas, which controls Gaza, is not interested in improving the lives of the population and does not take even minimal responsibility. Kouchner not commenting on the request, but telling a French radio station this week that the contacts with Hamas did not involve negotiations. What does Syrian President Bashar al-Assad have in common with Prime Minister Ehud Olmert? For a look at this question, watch an interview with former Knesset Foreign Affairs and Defense Committee Chairman Yuval Steinitz on the internet at israelnationalnews.com/TV. Shabbat Yud Tet of the 19th of Iyar on the Jewish calendar, and the weather forecast, fair and slightly cooler with a high wave warning at Mediterranean beaches Friday, seasonal temperatures through Sunday, slightly warmer on Monday. In Jerusalem Friday, a high temperature of 25 degrees centigrade, 77 Fahrenheit. At the Red Sea, 36 degrees centigrade, 97 Fahrenheit. The Dead Sea, 34 degrees centigrade, 93 Fahrenheit. Ernie Singer, Israel National Radio.
That was a look at Jerusalem weather, and now for your local weather, here's meteorologist Glenn Foxen.
On the weather map, high pressure will provide clear, dry, and warmer weather this weekend. Then a cold front will bring the chance of showers and thunderstorms on Memorial Day. The official Jewish Experience radio program weather forecast for Pittsburgh and vicinity. Tonight, partly cloudy and cool, low 40 to 45. Shabbos Day, sunny skies and pleasant temperatures, high around 70. Motzi Shabbos clear, low in the low 40s. Sunday mostly clear and milder, high in the upper 70s. On Memorial Day, a chance of thunderstorms developing. This is meteorologist Glenn Foxen wishing everyone a happy Lag BaOmer, good weather, and great times this Shabbos.
We want to wish our brothers and sisters in the Holy Land a very peaceful and restful Shabbat.
On this festive day of Lag BaOmer, it's time to get even more festive with the Mazel Tovs. And with them here once again is my daughter, Liba DeLynn.
Thanks. The Mazel Tovs this week are Dina and Matthew Roth on the birth of their daughter, Nava Ayelet. Mazel Tov, Mazel Tov. It must be really exciting. And Rabbi and Mrs. Shmuel Weinstein on the birth of a grandson. And Rabbi and Mrs. Yosef Silverman also had a birth of a grandson. Double mazel tov.
Thanks for the same grandson.
Oh, wow. Mazel tov, mazel tov. Mr. and Mrs. Ariel Shkedi on the birth of a son. And the birth will be Mirza Shaman Shabbos. Mazel tov, mazel tov.
let's take a look at some events around the community. For girls K through 8, Shira Day Camp, any level of observance accepted. 5-week session from June 30th to August 1st. Program includes sports, arts, crafts, baking, and outdoor swimming activities, and lots of fun. For more information and a free SDC water bottle, call the Colonel Jewish Learning Center at 412-420-0220. And for boys and girls, Camp Gan Izzy is still accepting applications. Call Rabbi Shmuley at 412-422-7300. The meeting of Food Addicts and Recovery Anonymous meets at the Pittsburgh Colo, 5808 Beacon Street, every Sunday evening from 7:30 to 9 p.m. Program is a recovery group for people who cannot control their eating and or their weight. Program is not for women only. Men are invited. For more information, call Ilana at 412-422-2224. And if you'd like to have your Mazel Tovs on our program, you can do it by calling 412-979-5770 or email Jewish Experience, which is what most people do, at Verizon.net by noon on Wednesday for that week's program. Now we got candlelighting time this week is 8:19 p.m. Renewed violence in Crown Heights. What's the solution? What's the answer? Stay with us. Benjamin Lipschitz next on the Jewish Experience. Retirement can be a wonderful reward for years of hard work, but it can also be stressful as you deal with questions about how to maintain your standard of living while protecting what you worked so hard for. What if I told you that you could generate extra cash flow without touching a penny of your savings, investments, or current income? If you or someone you love is 62 years or older and owns their own home, they may be able to take advantage of a federally regulated program called a home equity conversion mortgage or reverse mortgage. Seniors all across the U.S. are using reverse mortgages to increase their cash flow for purchasing long-term care insurance, putting grandkids through college, making charitable donations, paying off credit card debt, paying for prescription drugs, buying vacation homes, and paying for much-needed home repair. Call for a free copy of the Homekeeper Mortgage Consumer Fact Sheet today. Get the facts and help yourself and your family through a reverse mortgage. Call Andy at 412-562-2220 for a free copy while supplies last. Again, that number is 412-562-2220 for your free copy of the Homekeeper Mortgage Consumer Fact Sheet. First Mariner Bank is an equal housing lender. Like to welcome today Benjamin Lipschitz, who is a volunteer with the Crown Heights Shomrim in Crown Heights, New York, and they've been in the news lately, and there's been controversy lately with the New York City police and with the New York City government over an alleged beating of a 16-year-old yeshiva student who was carrying or doing some groceries or helping out his mother, and got attacked on the street, and as I understand it, was beaten unconscious. So, Benjamin, welcome to the program, and hope you can give us an update on all this.
Hi. Basically, as it stands now, the investigation is still open, and in general response to what has taken place, the police have flooded Crown Heights with a major presence.
Okay, that's good. Okay, so tell us a little bit about the showroom itself. How did it get started? And where has it come to today?
Shomrim originally started as a group called the Maccabees under Rabbi Shmuel Shraga, who started the Maccabees back in the early 60s as a response to the police's then lack of resources to be able to adequately pursue and stem crime in Crown Heights. While crime was a bigger issue around the city, they took it upon themselves to protect the neighborhood of Crown Heights. Just recently, there was a video published from a documentary on the Discovery Channel, which was basically a half-hour piece on the Maccabees, which I watched, and I learned a lot from it from Rabbi Shraga, who said to put it in the best way. He said, "We're not here to take upon ourselves the duty of the police. We're not here to replace the police. We're here to help them and add to their resources."
Well, you know, it's funny because in Pittsburgh, about 16 years ago, now almost 17 years ago, we had the exact same situation where people getting kind of accosted on the streets, and again, the police they told us they couldn't be everywhere, and so we actually patterned ourselves after the Baltimore Patrol, and started the Squirrel Assistance Patrol, but we have a kind of a rule here that we say that we cannot get involved in any situation. And so what we do, if we see something, we simply call it into a special back line into our dispatch center, which takes care of this stuff. So how does that differ from what you guys do?
We have less of a back-end communication with police. We have a more formal direct 911 call to the police. Our dispatch, when we typically get a call, we simultaneously notify the police and we dispatch our own members to an incident. But when we arrive on the incident, depending on our response time versus the police response time, we will interview a complainant or a victim in a case, be it whatever it is, hopefully nothing, usually.
Right.
But if someone is, Chas v'Shalom, the victim of a crime, of an assault, a mugging, we will take a description. And we will dispatch the responding members to begin searching, even for suspects. By the time police arrive, we will surrender the victim to the police and let the police do their interview, and also canvass the area. In cases, sometimes we'll spot suspects and we'll alert some of the responding police officers to that area. They will then conduct a stop. Typically, we aren't supposed to make stops. We aren't supposed to hold people.
Mm-hmm.
That is gray area, and it's
sure.
It can be a problem for volunteers legally and the likes. So typically we do have a more hands-off approach, unless we actually witness a crime during our patrols, in which we have the ability to make a citizen's arrest. We can hold a suspect or a criminal by force, obviously within reasonable force, and that is something that is respected and condoned by the police department.
Sure. Now, so when you say that, relations with police, I guess in the beginning, at least let me just say this, in Squirrel Hill, when the patrol was started here, the police were very apprehensive. But when they saw that we were really following and their suggestions and becoming their eyes and ears and working with them, it took a very short period of time before the police was actually supporting us and looking forward to our assistance. Is that the same kind of thing that you found or have seen in Crown Heights?
Well, I'm in Shumrim just about 4 years now, and from when I started, Shumrim already had a very good relationship with the police.
That's good.
So to begin with, we didn't have that much of an issue, like with apprehension and stuff like that. There obviously is amongst the individual police officers, sometimes they would feel like we're getting in their way or we are trying to replace them or trying to play cops and robbers in that sense.
Right.
But based on our, our more of a hands-off, hands-on approach that we take, the officers come to respect us and they get more comfortable with us.
Sure, and I would think just because of their limited numbers and their, they have the big city over there, they would think that it's great if every community had one.
I wish that were true for every single officer, but the officers that do count at the end of the day, they're the ones who believe it, and that makes our job all the more easier, as well as theirs.
Sure. So getting back to the 16-year-old boy, how's he doing now?
He's at home. He's healing. He right now has himself his jaw wired up from the fracture he sustained to his jaw. He cannot speak properly. He actually cannot speak at all, and he cannot eat. He has to eat pre-digested stuff because of it. He has slight vision loss in one eye from where he received the punch, which was to the side of his head. And he still has some slight bleeding still and stuff like that. But he's at home. He's in better spirits. His parents are, not as, as worried as they once were when he was still in the intensive care or in the observation unit. And for them, life is just getting back to normal, and they're hoping for an arrest.
And this is just an unprovoked attack. They just, kid was just walking home, and that was it.
Actually, it was the attack took place at 12 o'clock on Monday night.
Uh-huh.
He was on his way from his house on his bike to the late grocery store. We have a grocery store that's open late.
Okay.
Where he was there to pick up, according to his mother, baby formula, like last minute thing for his infant sibling. And he was accosted not even a half a block away from his house.
Wow.
He was riding up the block on his bike. It was slightly more of a dark area. And there's a lot of tree shade, and he doesn't remember not the beginning nor the end of the assault.
Mm.
It was all a blackout, like for one period. He was hit so hard in the head that when we did find him, when after we received the call that someone was spotted laying on the ground. When he started coming to, as Atzala started treating him, he at first didn't know where he was. He wasn't aware of like the time and date. He wasn't aware of his own, like he was a little confused at asking his own name. He slowly started coming to, and he started noticing that he was missing his cell phone, his watch, his wallet, then his bike as well.
So was the showroom involved, or is the showroom involved in trying to locate the perpetrator?
In the immediate sense, we immediately spread out and started searching, but we had very little to go on because he couldn't remember any description of the attackers. Witnesses gave us a description of two older teens or young adults, male blacks that were seen in the area before and then after walking away with a bike that appeared to be his, a small trick bike.
Uh-huh.
Later on, as we were still in the midst of canvases and searches, we had a friend of his who told us to give us a description of his bike and gave us a description, and we basically started searching for that description, alone. That usually is not a very good description to go on, and it's very crucial that Sherman gets, and canvases in general, it's very crucial to get it out there within the first 3-4 minutes.
Sure.
The window of opportunity to actually spot or catch someone gets severely minimized once we go over 4 minutes even.
Sure.
And in this case, it took us time to even gather any information because it took us a couple of minutes just to make sure he was okay, and which he wasn't, and make sure he gets the adequate medical care.
Okay. So now I'm looking at a long list of, and we hope that he should have a refu shlema immediately. We're looking at a long list of things that, from Yeshiva World News that was listed that have been going on in Crown Heights. And it's over a period of, they go back 2 years, 3 years here. But that aside, would you say, in your opinion, that Crown Heights is a fairly okay place to live in terms of safety?
Let me point out a website that kissed. Crown Heights that is a website that is specifically geared to Crown Heights. I took it upon itself to start reporting a lot of specifically all the Crown Heights news, which included crime and informal news. It is called crownheights.info. It's a website here. That website began documenting car crashes and incidents such as muggings and robberies, assaults. And what happened was is this feeling came about the community, in which community members started feeling that, hey, what's going on here? Is this all of a sudden becoming a war zone? Well, the answer to that is pretty simple, that no, it's not. It's just that there's more awareness of a lot of the incidents that is going on.
Right.
And that sometimes can create a sense of fear in people.
Sure.
But most people that live here will say, their regular day-to-day life doesn't change much. They'll just, be more careful when they walk out at night, which was always the case in Crown Heights.
Sure.
Even in the good times, which, people always have to be careful no matter what. We live in New York City at the end of the day.
Yeah, Jim, we're running out of time. Let me just say this. Does the community itself support the Sherman?
The community itself gives it in. Sherman enjoys very wide community support.
Good.
Sherman is a very independent organization which receives a lot of support from the community. And just that encourages recruitment and more volunteers to join in. And the encouragement of the current members to continue doing what they do.
Very good. And finally, we have a requirement in the Squirrel Hill Citizens Patrol that nobody is allowed to patrol armed. Do you have that same requirement, or is it okay on your end?
We have no arms, but our minds and our radios, which can call for others, and our cell phones, which call the police.
Right. Well, it looks like you guys are very similar to what we're doing, except obviously you got a little bit more action, which we kind of had when we started, but it moved on. But I wish you all a lot of luck, and I hope the showroom is 100% successful in cleaning up and moving all the crime out of Crown Heights. And Binyamin, I appreciate the time you spent with us today on the Jewish Experience.
It's my pleasure.
All right, take care. Have a good job.
You too.
Bye-bye. it's time to take a look at the feminine side of things with the feminine perspective. Here's Miss Devorah DeLynn.
Sometimes I wonder why God gave little girls the ability to giggle. While I absolutely enjoy teaching my young students, one of the most frustrating moments is when I pose a question and all I get is a long giggle. Well, God obviously has his reasons, most of which we can't understand. I once asked my young students a question. Instead of giggling this time, they stammered, because, to which I answered, "You're absolutely right. Sometimes the answer is only because. Sometimes we can't understand why we do something, but that's no reason to dismiss illegitimacy." In this week's Torah portion, Parshas Bichukosai, the Midrash teaches us about one of God's most befuddling and frustrating of creations, different personalities in people. While, of course, we can always point out that life, where everyone is exactly the same, is a boring life, there are sometimes, possibly when trying to come up with different answers to each child's difficult question, we wish that people could be a little bit the same. The Torah teaches us that because there are different types of people, there are different approaches to dealing with them. In education especially, one must be aware that what's good for one person might not be for another. The Torah tells us that there are four different types of people in Bnei Israel, and Parshas Bichukosai tells us exactly how to deal with each kind. The first group consists of farmers, to whom the Torah says, "And I will give you rains in the right time." To those farmers for whom it is difficult to observe Shemitah, Hashem reassures them on their level with rain to feed their crops. The second group are people who desire money, but don't want to work the ground or go to battle to get it. They just want peace and serenity. To them, the Torah says, "If it is difficult for you to follow my chukim, do them anyway, and I'll give you peace." The third group are those who enjoy warfare and battle, and to them the Torah says, "Prayer is your ultimate weapon." Finally, the fourth group, those who want to sit and study Torah all day. To them the Torah says, "I will set my presence amongst you. Even to you, the chukim are not understandable, but trust me, and we will walk together." The Midrash points out that very often, when we are commanded about different mitzvos, the Torah immediately promises rain and a good harvest in return for observing these mitzvos. This question does have a good answer. In order for us to learn Torah and follow these commandments, we need our basic necessities, food, clothing, a livelihood. Only with these things will we be able to do what we have to merit Olam Haba, where we will bask in the Divine Presence. In addition to promising us sustenance, the pasuk continues, "V'nasati shalom ba'aretz," and I will give peace in the land. Hello, Israeli government! The Torah tells us clearly what needs to be done to achieve peace in the land, and it doesn't mention a word about giving away the Golan Heights. All that's required is to live a life of Torah, one of modesty, good values, and most importantly, belief in God, the lack of which is the number one cause of war in Israel, and it's not from the side of the Arabs. Have a good Shabbos.
Now it's time for another classic story from our master storyteller, Rabbi Meir Goldwasser.
As we mentioned earlier in the program, today is the yahrzeit of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. The following story will give us a glimpse into the greatness of this holy Tana. The year of the story is the same type of year as it is this year, when Lag BaOmer fell on Friday. Most of the multitudes who had come there for Lag BaOmer remained there for the Shabbos. One of the people who was there said that we experienced a Shabbos gladness that was exalted and wondrous. It happened, however, on Shabbos morning, after the last minyan had completed the Musaf prayer at around noon, that suddenly a great anguished cry was heard. A Sephardic woman had brought her 3-year-old boy to fulfill her vow, a well-known custom to have a haircut at the gravesite of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. Then, without warning, the boy was struck with sickness and died at the resting place of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. The child was placed in a small room on the roof of the building, which stands above the gravesite, while doctors on the scene ordered that everyone present be quarantined. Piercing cries and wailing filled the air. Above them all, the anguished cry of the young mother, whose one and only child had died on the day of his special haircut on Lag BaOmer. The person who recounted the story said that he personally saw the lifeless body of the boy, his facial appearance drained of all color. Then, suddenly, the mother of the child, in the way of Jewish women of valor, girded herself with great inner strength. She went to the room where her son lay, lifted him up into her arms, and carried him downstairs to the shul, which was at the gravesite of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. She placed the body on the floor, and then, in an anguished, tear-choked voice, cried out, "O Tzaddik, O Tzaddik, Tzaddik Rabbi Shimon, behold, I, your maidservant, came here in your honor to cut the hair of my only child, who Hashem granted to me in your merit. I fulfilled my vow that I would bring her here for his first haircut on Lag BaOmer. Yesterday, I brought him here alive and had his haircut accompanied by music, song, food and drink, and much joy. Now, how can I leave from here without my child? How will I enter my house?" Her cries and wailing could be heard throughout the area. Whose heart could not be melted, hearing such anguished cries of inner pain? The woman then stood up and said, "Tzaddik, Tzaddik, I am leaving my child before you as he is. I beg to you, do not shame me. Do not turn me away empty-handed. Return my child to me alive and well, as he was when I brought him before you. Let the name of Hashem, as well as your name, be sanctified in the world, and let it be known that there is a God who rules this world, and there are tzaddikim whose bidding he fulfills." They closed the doors of the synagogue, leaving the child inside alone. After a few moments, the sounds of a child crying for his mother could be heard coming from the shul. The Chacham, the Sephardic scholar, who was there, opened the door for the mother to enter. The little boy, who was now standing on his feet, cried, "Mommy, give me some water, for I am thirsty." They brought him some water, after which his mother carried him upstairs to the room where he had been previously. A great tumult erupted as news spread that the child had returned to life. The entire assemblage came to see with their own eyes, and the doctors gathered to examine the child. They admitted that by the laws of nature, the impossible had occurred. It could only have been a miracle, and the merit of the holy Tana, Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. The Kiddush Hashem, the sanctification of Hashem's name, was incredible. This is Rabbi Meir Goldwasser, wishing you all a good Shabbos.
As we wrap up another exciting Lag BaOmer edition of the Jewish Experience radio program, a couple of reminders. Girls K through 8, share a day camp. For more information and a free SDC water bottle, call the Carlow Jewish Learning Center, 412-420-0220. And for boys and girls, Camp Gan Izzy, still accepting applications. Call Rabbi Shmuley at 412-422-7300. Don't forget the meeting of Food Addicts and Recovery Anonymous, meeting at the Pittsburgh Carlow. Call Ilana for more information on that, 412-422-2224. And don't forget, if you'd like to have your Mazel Tovs on our program, you can give us a call at 412-979-5770 or email jewishexperience@verizon.net by noon on Wednesday for that week's program. And we want to thank Binyamin Lipschitz, spokesman for the Crown Heights Shomrim, for updating us on the national attention drawn to Crown Heights over renewed violence. And, of course, our faithful and cutting-edge staff, Rabbi Meir Goldwasser, Rabbi Yosef Eisen, Rabbi Moshe Pekar on the keyboard, taking us out, Dr. Michael Schulman, Ms. Devorah Dalin, and, of course, our engineer, Jeremiah Bossenstein, for another outstanding show. Don't forget candlelighting time this week, 8:19 p.m. It's been a lot of fun, but I do have to run. Don't forget, Jewish Radio's here for you. Will you be here for Jewish Radio? Pledge your support today at JewishExperience@Verizon.net. I'm Hirsch DeLynn. Have a wonderful Shabbos. We'll see you all next week or on the web at JewishExperienceRadio.com anytime. And back here next Friday, same Yiddish time, same Yiddish channel. See you then.